What it do, sports fans? Welcome to the Sports Live podcast brought to you by Multimedia Live. I'm Sboom Jikeliso, your host, and I will be joined by various guests on this exciting new podcast to discuss the latest ins and outs of the sporting world. See you in the quarterfinals. Japan will face South Africa in the quarterfinals of the Rugby World Cup. I have to admit first, I got it wrong. I thought the Springboks were going to play Ireland. In fact, I was trolling quite a few Irish people in Japan while I was there. I kept saying to them, see you in the quarterfinals. See you in the quarterfinals. That's when I was in Japan and South Africa had just lost to the All Blacks and Ireland had just beaten Scotland. I was dead certain that in Group A, Ireland would be on top. South Africa, obviously, after losing to the All Blacks, would be second. And then those two teams, as much as they've got huge admiration for each other, would then face off in the quarterfinals. Unfortunately, Japan went and bloody well messed up my predictions, upset the apple cart completely, probably buggered up someone's bets. Thank goodness I'm not a betting man yet. But they beat Scotland in what I thought was one of the most thrilling Rugby World Cup games I have ever seen. 28-21, all the points, can you believe it? All the points scored in that game were from converted tries. Japan scored 4, Scotland scored 3, converted. I know Japan missed 2 penalties at goal, but it just didn't matter. They played probably the perfect, what was for them, a knockout game. Scotland, unfortunately, I think their emotions got the better of them, which is ironic because it was the Japanese that were crying the entire time just before the match kicked off. I mean, this is a game that almost didn't happen leading up to this match. There was the typhoon, and World Rugby was talking about cancelling the game, as they had done to the Italy All Black game and the Canada game and also to other games. I mean, the Canada Namibia game, I mean, that game would have been a cracker in its own right, even though there wasn't much riding on it. But for the safety of the players, obviously, and the organization and everything else, it was important that they make sure that safety comes first. And fortunately, we had a beautiful day in Yokohama, a stadium that I actually was at to watch rugby. And I can tell you, it is an unbelievable place to go watch rugby, outside near the Heineken beer tent, which is probably bigger than any castle corner you will find in South Africa. You'll find scores of people sitting outside and watching probably the pre-games. They were probably watching Wales-Uruguay prior to their big clash against Scotland there. But now it is Japan against the Springboks. So is it going to be bright all over again? That's what people are talking about. Obviously, in 2015, Japan did the unthinkable and beat South Africa in rugby in their first ever encounter. Obviously, South Africa did get some sort of retribution in the friendly test that they played prior to the Rugby World Cup, which they won convincingly. But now we're talking about the real deal. A word on Japan. Let me tell you this. Their two coaches, the head coach, Jamie Joseph, used to coach the Highlanders, coached the Highlanders to their first Super Rugby title, assisted by Tony Brown, who used to play for the Highlanders. My goodness, I used to love Tony Brown. Can I tell you that? When I was a young little fly half there at Pretoria Boys High, thinking I could make it in rugby, I used to actually model my kicking game towards what Tony Brown used to do. Obviously, I wasn't as good, but man, as a coach, I think the pair of them are probably the best coaching combo World Rugby has ever seen. And I know Eddie Jones has done amazing things. I know him and Jake White and the trio or the quartet that they had to win the 2007 World Cup, that included Gert Small and Alistair Coetzee, did a brilliant job. But I mean, when you talk about coaching, man, when you talk about actually bringing skills, that Japan team is coached. I looked at the hands that they put together for their tries. Absolutely unbelievable. Their opportunistic play of their wingers. Kotaro Matsushima, my goodness, this kid was at the Sharks Academy not too long ago. I wanted to interview him at some point, but apparently his English wasn't that great. And I'm sure it's immaculate now, you know. And Fukuoka, his other wing partner, ripping the ball out, man, chipping and chasing to regather. Just absolutely brilliant play. The captain, Michael Leach, Lapis Labaskakhni, Shota Hori, those guys gave it their absolute best. But I think against the Springboks, and you're going to hear this in my conversation with my special guest, is that Japan are probably going to hit a green wall once the quarterfinals come into play. The Springboks, they definitely have a massive weight and height advantage over the Japanese. The scrums are going to be a different contest altogether. The Springboks have two complete front rows. Unfortunately, Trevor Nyakane, who had to go back home, was part of those two front rows that could demolish any team in world rugby, and he has been replaced by Thomas Du Toit. But that said, I mean, South Africa can put out a front row of Steven Kitsoff, Malcolm Marks, as well as Frans Malherbe, and they can switch it up and put in Bistim Taurira, Bongi Mbonambi, as well as Vincent Koch or Thomas Du Toit. It's a glut of options in the front row. You go to the second row, Luat Diage, you're looking at Eben Etzebeth, you're looking at Franco Mostert, you know, and it's an Arches Neyman who was insane against Canada. So, I mean, if you're Rassie Erasmus, you're licking your lips at this prospect of facing a physically less imposing team. But the caution is that Japan are very well coached. So if they get their tactics correctly, my word, I am telling you, the Springboks will be in trouble again. It could be Brighton again, and you don't want to go down that route. I think South Africa need to be very smart. I think a lot will depend on Andre Pollard and how he distributes the ball. If they go there thinking they're going to bash route one and use Damien Dialande as their battering ram, there's going to be problems. You need to create space for yourself against this Japanese team. They move the ball quickly. You need to reciprocate by tightening the game up in the tight loose, but then you have to get the ball going. You have to be creative and innovative. You saw how brilliant Russell was, the number 10 for Scotland, in finding space in behind their wingers with their chip kicks. So if anything goes to the wings, to Cheslin Kolbe, to Makazole Mapimpi, those kicks need to be gathered. They need to know what to do once they've gathered those kicks. So they need to dink things behind. They need to chase everything with a lot of enthusiasm. So it's going to be an absolutely brilliant game. I do tip the Springboks to overcome Japan. However, they're going to have to be smart about it. Please, can we just stop with the Domkop rugby for one moment and just play a complete World Cup game like we did against Italy, like we've seen Cheslin Kolbe play this entire World Cup? I think that's what South Africa expects from the Springboks. But in an administrative point of view, I think it was an error to kick the Sunwolves out of Super Rugby. I mean, next season is the last season, and apparently, well, according to those in the know, is that the Sunwolves won't be part of the 2021 deal that will see Super Rugby being shortened. Another strength versus strength deal is being put together that will put the Sunwolves out of that competition. You know, they're going to take a step backwards, and people are saying maybe there should be a Six Nations rather than the Rugby Championship, which has four, which is South Africa, New Zealand, Australia and Argentina. People calling for Fiji and Japan to be included in a Six Nation. Who's going to pay for that? I don't know. Is there a market for it? Are there big sponsors that are able to chuck the money into Southern Hemisphere rugby and make it the behemoth that is the Six Nations up in the north that features England, Wales, Scotland, as well as Ireland and Italy. So, and France, obviously. So, I mean, can we do it? I don't know. So that's up to the administrators. And that's all I'm going to say about the Rugby World Cup for now. We've had a lot of Rugby World Cup talk on the sports podcast, and it's time to switch it up. There's a little bit of football. Bafana Bafana played Mali over the weekend in the Nelson Mandela Challenge in Nelson Mandela Bay. It was Molefe Ntseki's first game in charge of Bafana Bafana, and this is what he had to say after that game.
So I'm very happy to have won my first match against a very strong team, a very organized team, which happens to be Mali. And I had a chat with the coach before the match, and he's a gentleman, He's very open. He can share things. He can talk. And I think that is good for us as Africans to have that rapport, to have that relationship of discussing football without fear. And it really helps because we started the match, we went into this match knowing very well that we have got a very good relationship with the players and the technical team from Mali. Yesterday we had a gala dinner, and these are very humble people, and we know as South Africans we are also a very humble nation. So we really want to thank Mali to have honored the fixture to come here and play us. Like I said, we want to thank every South Africans who supported us from day one. The journey does not end here. We still have a long way to go, going into the qualifiers for AFCON 2021 and the World Cup 2022 in Qatar.
That was Molefe Ntseki talking about the Bafana game against Mali, giving kudos to the Malian team that was very challenging in that 2-1 win, but a good performance from Bafana. Bafana deemed Furman, I think, with the penalty, as well as Temba Zwane with the other strike. They did miss out on a few opportunities to kill off the game in the second half, most especially, but hearty performances all round from the team. I think Keegan Dolly has been unlucky to suffer yet another injury in national team duty. I wish all the best to Percy Tau as well, who will be, unfortunately, he didn't play, won't be featuring this international window. Apparently, was taken to hospital sometime during the week as well, nursing an injury, and they're trying to get him back on the field for Club Brugge, where he's based at the moment, as soon as possible. Obviously, Percy Tau involved in the UEFA for Champions League, where they are in the same group as Real Madrid, and they got an unbelievable draw, if you remember, a few weeks ago against Real Madrid 2-2, and he assisted one of the goals they did, Percy Tau. So he is one of the South African boys on the up and up, and we wish him the best with his injury, and we wish Lebo Mutiba as well the best with his injury as well. He, of course, he's our main number 9 striker, Mr. Hlohla Itishet, Mr. Tuck It In. And I was also at the multi-choice Disky Challenge over the weekend. It was a nice little Saturday out. Got some nice little VIP treatment at Lucas Masterpieces Muripe Stadium. It was a brilliant day out. It was nice, warm weather. Just, you know how Pretorian people do. There was the band was there. There was a brass band playing. You know, Pretorians always come out. Nice, friendly atmosphere. And just before I get more into what a great time it was at the Disky Challenge, SuperSport United did play Kaizer Chiefs, and I managed to catch up with a few of the youngsters. You know, we tend to ignore some of the kids bubbling under in South African football, and then we wonder where they come from. I caught up with one of the most talented South African youngsters in South Africa, who is playing in his fifth. Multi-choice Disky Challenge season. That's Kanye Samayo. He started off with Chippa United, and he's now in the colors of SuperSport United, and they beat Kaizer Chiefs Multi-choice Disky Challenge team 2-0. And this is what he had to say after the game.
Kanye, so how's the game, and how have you felt about your contribution to the team?
Yeah, the game was hard. You know, it wasn't an easy game because, you know, playing against Kaizer Chiefs, and Kaizer Chiefs, we all know that Kaizer Chiefs is a team that likes keeping the ball, you know. So we told ourselves during training, if we can suffocate them and let them not even make 10 touches, then we would be able to play against them. And that's what we did, and they got frustrated in the first half, so they couldn't play, and we managed to win the game.
At this level, junior level, do you guys have any fear of any teams like Chiefs? You know, they come from Naturena, they come from a big club, they've got huge resources. Does that play in your mind at all when you face them?
Honestly, when it comes to development level, like, it's only the brand, Kaizer Chiefs, because we're all equal. It's just that it depends on who wants it more.
Yeah. So you go out there in the field and you're just like, no, we're the same. It doesn't matter what resources you've got versus us.
Yeah, it's about who wants it more and the courage.
Yeah. So tell me, playing this challenge, how long have you been playing in the competition now?
I've been playing in the competition for 5 years now, because I started with the multi-choice challenge when I was at Sheffield United. 2014-15 season.
Okay. Yeah, and how's it been for you?
It has been good, you know, like everything was going my way, and yeah, last season I took the top goal scorer, you know, so yeah, things are going good for me at the moment.
Do you think it will give you an opportunity to get a look into the first team?
Yeah, definitely, because the first team coach told me that I should get minutes, you know, in order for me to be sharp.
Yeah.
Whenever I get a call up to the first team, so I'm ready.
Yeah, and obviously seeing how well the first team is doing must also be encouraging the positive spirit around the club.
Yeah, definitely, especially with the players who have come in, you know, the likes of Kabuza,
yeah.
Like the spirit is very high in the changing room, and even at training too, it's very high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, excellent. And like looking at guys like Pesita who played against Real Madrid just last week or a couple of weeks ago, you know, and he started here, does that give you belief?
Yeah, definitely, because, you know, he's an inspiration to other footballers, you know, about where he started in the multi-choice Tusky Challenge, you know.
Yeah.
So it gives hope, it gives us hope as soccer players, you know, that we can also make it in the big leagues.
Yeah. Well, excellent stuff. I wish you all the best. You guys played very, very well.
Thank you very much.
All the best for the Tusky Challenge. Hope to see you in the football team.
Thank you very much.
Cheers, bro.
That was Kanyisa Mayo talking about SuperSport United, hoping to get chances in the first team. But I also caught up with the Kaizer Chiefs goalkeeper, Buntle Molefe, who also is part of the production line at Kaizer Chiefs that is renowned for producing goalkeepers. Obviously, we've seen Bruce Vuma, as well as we know Mzansi's number one, Itumele Nkune, comes from the same academy at Kaizer Chiefs. And we've seen in the past Brian Spider-Man Baloy, we've seen Botende Eshele, we've seen Rowan Fernandez, and this is Buntle Molefe, probably the next big thing that we will see in the near future, talking about his chances as well of joining the ranks of the likes of Kune and Bruce Vuma.
So I'm here at the Multi-Choice Biscuit Challenge. I'm with Buntle Molefe for the Kaizer Chiefs Multi-Choice Biscuit Challenge team. Not the day you guys wanted today, going down 2-0 to SuperSport. Yeah, how did you guys feel about that game?
It wasn't one of the hardest games. I mean, we played well. There were certain chances we didn't take.
Yeah.
It was just like inconsistent. The first half we came in good. We had the game. The second half, 20 minutes into the second half, we just fell down. Because now we kept on missing chances. We stopped believing in ourselves. So that's what made us down.
There were a couple of moments where it seemed like you guys were actually coming back. I mean, you had a chance right there by the end where the goalkeeper kind of saved it. You guys actually analyze yourselves at this junior level to see where you can improve.
Yeah, every game before pre-match training.
Yeah.
We play on a Saturday, pre-match training on a Friday. We check ourselves, we analyze, and we see where we can fix things for the next day.
Yeah.
In the morning we go again, we refresh our minds.
Yeah.
And we see where we can continue going. And I mean, at this level, if you can't analyze yourself and do it in the game, because there's no point of just analyzing yourself. You're supposed to do the certain things the coaches tell you. So I feel like today we didn't do those things because the coach instructed us to do certain things, but it didn't follow through. So we just play our own game, and that's what led us to lose today.
To go down.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, being a goalkeeper at Chiefs does not come with a little bit of pressure, because institutionally, Chiefs has produced some of the best goalkeepers we've seen in this country, and they keep doing it. I mean, Kune came after the likes of Spider-Man Baloy, Rowan Fernandez. I mean, there's a whole list. If you go even further back, probably even before you were born, like, goalkeepers were known to be the best in the country. Do you not feel like we have to up that standard or keep that standard?
It's a lot of pressure. I mean, like, I haven't got my clean sheet yet.
Yeah.
I mean, how many games? About 8 games that I played. And that, to me, sometimes being Kaizer Chiefs and considering in 8 goals, in 8 games, sometimes to myself, I feel like I'm not good enough, you know?
Yeah.
But then that's where your mentality comes in.
Yeah.
The greatness comes in. I believe myself. I play all the time. And that pressure to me doesn't exist, because as a player, be yourself. If you're yourself, I mean, you can go through anything.
Yeah. And do you learn from the seniors? I mean, I know Bruce Vuma is now, you know, in the Bafana ranks. Kune obviously being the top goalkeeper in the country still. What do you learn from them?
I learn a lot from Bruce.
Yeah.
Bruce is one of the youngest goalkeepers, I mean.
Yeah.
He's gone through a lot.
as a young goalkeeper, he's only 24.
Yeah.
He's in the senior team for even Bafana Bafana.
Yeah, he was at
For that, the last, at his age,
AFCON, yeah.
At his age, that's a beautiful thing, because I mean, even if he's not playing,
yeah,
at least he's getting the feeling of being there.
Yeah.
So by the time he hits maybe, let's say, 27, there's a chance to go overseas.
Yeah.
And I learned from him, you know.
Yeah.
I try to compete with him.
Oh, okay.
Because you know, yeah. I know he's different.
Yeah.
But I try to compete with him, and that's how I learn.
Yeah.
If I compete, that's how I learn. And soon enough, I hope I also go overseas.
No, excellent stuff. Yeah. All the best for the rest of your career. Hope to see you there at the top, very top.
And we are going to take a quick break before I bring in my special guest.
Guns, an essential tool in self-protection or a catalyst for criminality. CliffCentral.com presents Guncast, a podcast that unpacks the divisive issue of gun ownership in South Africa. Join legal expert Martin Hood as he hosts a series of talks with both sides of the gun lobby. Whether you support the right to carry guns or you believe they're a destructive tool that society could do without, Guncast will enlighten and challenge you in equal measure. Find Guncast now on the Cliff Central app, on CliffCentral.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And now my special guest this episode is an esteemed sports media authority that is from this beautiful land we call South Africa, but he is now based in Doha and works for Al Jazeera, one of the biggest international news agencies in the world. His name is Peter Stemmett. He is a friend of mine, a media mentor, and one of the first people who taught me how to score a boxing bout. I'm not sure if he remembers that. You might remember him though from his time at ETV and ENCA, as well as the old ANN7. He also started a little side project called the Sports Eagle, which I have no doubt will soar to incredible heights in the future. Welcome to the Sports Live podcast, Peter Stemmett. How are you doing, buddy?
Sabu, you're very kind. I'm very well, thank you. Hope you're well too, buddy.
I'm great, buddy. I'm glad to have you on my podcast for a change after doing a cameo on yours a few weeks ago.
It's only a pleasure, and I'm very much looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, man, and I want us to get straight to that conversation. And I just first of all, how has Doha been treating you? It's more than 2 years now, I believe.
Yeah, you know what? It's actually coming up for 3 years.
Wow.
Next month, end of next month, will be 3 years. How quickly time goes by. Listen, it's hot here, make no mistake. But the winters are lovely. They're very mild. It's kind of like a South African spring. So kind of just waiting for that. And then we'll head outdoors, the wife and I, take the dog for a walk.
Yeah.
Just enjoy the weather. Overall, Doha really is very nice. There's plenty to do, not necessarily plenty to see, but certainly plenty to do, more than enough to keep you busy, and we're enjoying it.
Yeah, man. It sounds absolutely amazing. Of course, a few months back you were in the country and we got to hang out a bit for lunch with you and your wife Ndando, and you were telling us all about how what a wonderful country Doha is. But of course the rules there, the culture there is completely different. What do you miss about South Africa?
Oh, let me be straight up, and I know it's going to sound very stereotypical, but we miss Biltong, we miss Boerewors, and we miss good weather. but you know what we have managed to do, and this is kudos to Mrs. Stemmett. She's actually managed to find a South African butcher here in Doha, and just as recently as as recently as about a week ago, we had Boerewors rolls here. And, that will make anybody happy, as you can imagine. So at least there's that. Biltong, maybe not necessarily as readily available. I think that there are ways to get Biltong here. But, you know, there's Biltong and then there's Biltong, as you know. So you've got to be very careful and very selective. But, other than that, it's good. And the other nice thing around here is that there's something like – expats from about 180 different countries here. So you can just imagine in terms of restaurants, there are so many options in terms of cuisine. And, you know, we've had a really good time just trying things out. And I can tell you it's hit and miss. I thought it was probably maybe 2 years ago, I think. I thought I was going to take the wife out to a Persian restaurant. I think it was actually our wedding anniversary, if I remember correctly. And I thought I was being all fancy, you know, Persian restaurant sounds really exotic. And it was such a disappointment. I think we may have had to stop at KFC afterwards just to replenish.
Oh man, it sounds like the kind of thing I'd also accidentally fall into, mate.
But yeah, other than that, it's all good here.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about the sports. Obviously, you know, being with Al Jazeera and an international news agency, how do you view South African sports? Has your sort of perspective of South African sports and the goings on changed since, you know, now you're not so much in the country, but you see how maybe outsiders also view South Africa? You know, for instance, we had a spout of xenophobic attacks that led to a lot of countries not participating in friendly matches with South Africa because of those xenophobic attacks, you know, and that led to worldwide condemnation of the attacks and what you would call a miniature sporting ban, if you could go that far, for Bafana Bafana, you know, those kind of things that happen. What is the coverage like where you are, and what's the coverage like internationally of the issues that surround South Africa?
Yeah, I mean, it's not easy, make no mistake. I think the first challenge here is just trying to get my colleagues to pronounce President Cyril Ramaphosa's name correctly. So heaven only knows, you know, it's like BC Jonas. If he had to become a bit more internationally prominent, you can just imagine how difficult that might be to try and help the guys out this side. But on a little bit more serious note, I can tell you that there's a lot of British expats that work at Al Jazeera. And with all due respect to our American friends and colleagues, the British do tend to know South Africa a lot better than the Americans do. And you'll be amazed at how clued up they are when it comes to our country. I remember, gosh, it would have been about 2 years ago now when Cyril Ramaphosa was involved in that election campaign within the ANC to become the ANC's president with Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma. And there was a British colleague of mine who was telling me that she was rooting for Dlamini-Zuma, and then she just laid out all these reasons why she was in favor of Dr. Dlamini-Zuma. And I thought, wow, that's quite incredible. You never imagined that, you know, somebody from Britain would have that kind of information about our country. So it's not necessarily just a sort of wide view of the country. There's certainly a lot more interest and a lot more knowledge, which is great. But at the same time, as you say, when it comes to these sort of xenophobic attacks and incidences, it is embarrassing, let's be honest. And, you know, every now and again, you might come to work and then somebody says, hey, what's going on there? And then it's like, well, you know, and it's not always easy to explain, because obviously having been out of the country for a couple of years now, you know, you're not necessarily privy to what exactly happened. You know, it's different when you're actually at home and you live there and you live the experience and you know exactly what happened, because, as you know, it's very, very easy to just get a false idea or maybe just a microcosmic idea of what's going on just by reading News 24, the Daily Maverick, every day. You know, it's not the same as actually being there and actually living it. And then obviously, you know, as you say, games being cancelled or teams not wanting to play against Bafana Bafana, for example. I mean, obviously that's embarrassing in its own. But again, you know, I try to explain to the guys this side what's actually happening. And again, there are people that might just have not necessarily a particular point of view, but it's one of those points of view when you know that they've only really been getting one side of the story, or they just saw a headline on whatever it might be, News 24 again, or whatever it might be, and then they've sort of formulated an opinion just based purely on that. And then, you know, I try to explain a little bit and give them some additional information and try to explain why it is, how it is, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh man, that's actually quite the breakdown of that world, because I've always been curious. I know I spent a little bit of time at the Sunday Mirror, but it's UK, so they will have an in-depth understanding of South African sports and sporting politics. So I'm always curious about all the other countries that aren't necessarily Britain, but the way you've put it has been excellent. And speaking of world sports, the IAAF Athletics Championships were in Doha about a week ago, Pete, and South Africa came back with Iqanda Kops Imbandeskova, 0 medals. We weren't even on the medals tables. Pete, you were there doing some coverage in and around the athletics track. What happened, mate? What could you tell us?
Yeah, but Iqanda is exactly what it was. Embarrassing, perhaps. But you know what? It is what it is. And, you know, we were obviously, I wouldn't necessarily on high alert. Maybe that's not the way to put it. But you knew coming into the championships that there was no Costa Semenya, there was no Wade van Niekerk. So that automatically took South Africa out of the running for, I would argue, 2 guaranteed medals and possibly even 2 guaranteed gold medals. So obviously that didn't happen. And then you sort of looked at the list and tried to work out, okay, where are we going to get medals from? And I thought that Luvo Manyonga was a medal contender, right? And possibly somebody like Ruthwell Samai as an outside bet. And as it turned out, they were 4th and 5th. In the long jump final, and you know, you can't really get any closer than that without actually winning the medal. I had a look also at the sprints. I thought that Akani Simbine had a chance for us, and I think he finished 4th as well in the 100 meter final. So again, ever so close, missing out by a whisker. Anaso Jobodwana, I always think is there or thereabouts. Obviously, it didn't work out for him. I was there on the Saturday night for the 100, the 4x100 meter finals. South Africa were actually in lane 4, if I remember correctly, which, you know, pretty much if you're in lane 4 or 5, that means that certainly as far as the qualifying goes, you were the top or the second best team. And, you know, we watched, I think it was Blodlo, Munyai, Simbine, and Mahakwe, if I remember correctly. And again, there was just, it just didn't happen for us. So, you know, if things had gone a little bit differently, there could have been 2 or 3 medals, maybe. Again, maybe even 4 or 5 with a couple of golds in there. But it didn't quite work out. And I think that there is an element that we need to accept that when it comes to athletics, unlike maybe cricket and maybe rugby, certainly, you know, South Africa is not a powerhouse on the international stage. We probably go to an athletics world championship, such as the one that just took place here in Doha, hoping to win 2, 3, maybe 4 medals, and then we would consider that a successful championships. And then you have a look at, let's say Kenya or Ethiopia. And if they don't win at least that number of medals as gold medals, they would see it as an abject failure. So, you know, we've got to keep it in context. But again, you know, that is what it is like at the sort of surface level, if you like. But then you get into the administrative sort of side of things, and you look at the way that Athletics South Africa is run, you look at the way that the provincial federations are run, you look at SASCOC, and then you sort of take a step back and you ask yourself, how on earth are we ever going to get better when all of that stuff is going on?
That's exactly what boggles my mind, you know. It's that the fact that we have such talented athletes, but we somehow contrive administratively to bring out the worst out of them. I think it's absolutely diabolical. And I'm going to read a piece from Okit. Okit, I'm sure you know Okit de Villiers, who's been an athletics writer for as long as I have been a rugby writer, if not longer. Okit says, I think, and he covered the last London Olympics, that South Africa came back from this athletics championship in Doha, and it's a stark contrast to how they performed in London just 2 years ago, where they finished third overall in the medals table, which is incredible when you consider that we're competing against the likes of Jamaica and USA. This is me speaking now. And he goes on to say that was courtesy of 3 gold medals, a silver and 2 bronze. Obviously, like you said, there was no Wade for Niekerk this time around and no Caster Semenya. However, you look at Akani Sembine. Akani, you know, he's run his best times this year. Even in finishing fourth in this 100 meters was his a PB. So I guess from him, you can't ask anything more. If you do your PB, that's your PB. you know that there's not much you could do, and he got fourth. But you look at Steven Mokoka, placed just outside. He finished fifth in the marathon. And you look at Rochelle Sumai as well as Luvo Manyonga. Luvo Manyonga is like I'd say top 2 long jumper. I think we should have definitely expected a medal from him. Do you know what this then brings, reminds me of, Pete, is that in the 2007 championships, we came back, without a single medal a year just before the 2008 Beijing Olympics. And if you, will know your athletics, obviously the Olympics are in Japan next year. This does not bode well, because we went then and went to Beijing the following year, and we only got one solitary silver medal at the time, and that was from Kgotso Mokoena, the long jumper. So there are eerie similarities to that time. We're not guaranteed to have Wade back, because he's had his struggles with his injuries. We're not guaranteed to have Casta, because she, the IAAF is right on her back, on a witch chant to drive her out of the sport, and that would have taken a toll. Anaso Chobotwana has just come back from injury, a long-term injury, so he was a medal contender for the 200 meter in the last Olympics, and he's part of the 4x100 team that has Clarence Munyai, that has who's this, Oksaman Mahakwe, as well as Akane Sembine and Thando Dlodlo. So, in a long-winded way, mate, it seems like we're back in 2007, where we thought we'd never get back to, considering the caliber of athletes that we had at the 2016 Beijing Olympics. And how do you feel about this?
Yeah, I think you've just hit the nail on the head there. It's a statement that I've made before. In my opinion, South African athletes, and it's not just athletics, I would extend it to swimming, rugby, cricket, football, tennis, whatever, our athletes prosper despite the system, not because of the system. I've long held the view that South African sport, unfortunately, is about how much money the administrators can make for themselves, as opposed to how well our athletes can perform on the international stage. What you've just mentioned there about the 2007 championships a year before the next Olympic Games, 2008 in Beijing, it's quite eerie. It's perhaps something that needs to be of great concern. It's ominous. The only thing that I would say to try and counter that sort of negative feeling, or almost feeling of foreboding, is that if nothing else, at least we're talking about different athletes and we're talking about a different era. So that should give us a smidgen of hope. And as you know, as South Africans, we do tend to be the most hopeful people on earth. We always believe that a World Cup or a World Championship or a gold medal is right around the corner, even though there's absolutely no chance of it happening. But we always believe. And you're right. I mean, we've got several athletes there that, if they're fit, And if the conditions are right on the day, there's no reason why they can't win us a medal, maybe even a gold medal. As far as Caster Semenya goes, I mean, I've said before, I think that the whole situation around her and the way that the IAAF are dealing with the matter, and even the way that Athletics South Africa have dealt with the matter, is nothing short of disgraceful. Unfortunately for us, I don't see the situation changing in our favor. So we're going to, in the short term anyway, we're going to have to find a way to deal with this. And unfortunately, the only way that you really deal with it from a practical point of view is you have to continue without Caster, which, again, I think it's disgraceful, but, you know, there is a reality at play here. So we're going to have to do that. Hopefully, somebody like Wade van Niekerk is fit. Hopefully, somebody like Joe Bodwana, Simbine, as you said, Simbine ran a personal best. You can't ask for more than that, and it turned out to be fourth. It kind of reminds me, if you go back all the way to 1996, one of our neighboring countries, Namibia, had a famous sprinter named Frankie Fredericks. And he was actually the favorite for the gold medal in Atlanta in both the 100 and the 200 meters. And I can't remember if he ran a personal best, but he certainly ran an incredibly fast time in both races. But he finished second on both occasions because the guy that won just either ran a personal best or a world leading time. Or even a world record time. I remember Donovan Bailey, the Canadian, was the guy that won the 100 meters on that occasion. And certainly as a teenager at the time, I had certainly never heard of Donovan Bailey before. It's like, who's this guy? How did he beat Frankie Frederick? So those kind of things do happen. I'm sure that there will be athletics aficionados who will turn around and say, oh, of course, how could you not have known Donovan Bailey? He was A, B, C, D, E at the time. You know, I'm willing to admit that. But yeah, I mean, it doesn't look good at the moment. The only thing that we can also add to that is that when it comes to the Olympic Games and athletics from a South African perspective, we tend to maybe get two or three medals from track and field, and then you sort of move on and you kind of hope that you might get two or three in the swimming pool. And then you look around and maybe you might get something from rowing. You might get something like in Brazil, we got something in the triathlon. You look around, rugby sevens is obviously one that we would always expect to get a medal from. Although I do think that in rugby sevens, it's becoming increasingly more difficult and more competitive. It's no longer just sort of South Africa, New Zealand and Fiji who are the medal contenders in rugby sevens. There are other nations that are now also right up there. So it's becoming increasingly difficult. And absolutely, the United States, no doubt about it. And I think that they themselves have got to a point where they think that rugby sevens is one of the areas where they will win a medal. And you know how it goes with the Americans. Once they believe that they're going to win something, they usually do.
Yeah, no, they are very dogged. And I want to get into that conversation sometime later during this formation of this podcast that we do put together here at Multimedia Live into how important the U.S. market is to global sports. You know, you saw how FIFA only really got cleaned up when the USA got involved with the FBI and they took out the Blatter and his cabal and a string of corrupt activities that had been going on. But aside from that, I think the US market, like, I think it would open up, rugby would become an unbelievable sport, even bigger than it is now, if the US invested even more into rugby than they do. You've seen how sevens has exploded in the US. I love it. You look at the Vegas sevens, the sevens World Cup was there the last time out. You look at the Rio Olympics, how well the USA team did there. You know, I think you need the USA, a strong USA team in any sport. It draws the crowds, it brings in the money, but that's a conversation we'll have someday together, buddy.
Sounds good to me. I agree with you. If I can briefly say, I think that 100% the United States are a key market, or is a key market in rugby. What I'm excited about is, it was 2 years ago now, and I think they're coming up for their third season, they launched a thing called Major League Rugby. And that seems to have taken off, and it's relatively stable as well. And something that we've noticed in this Rugby World Cup that's currently ongoing, there are actually a lot of Uruguayan players that are plying their trade in Major League Rugby. And just purely from playing regularly, not necessarily against the best opposition as you might expect in maybe the Heineken Cup or the English or French leagues or Super Rugby, but just playing regularly against decent opposition that you'll find in Major League Rugby. Look how decently Uruguay have performed at this last World Cup. They certainly didn't disgrace themselves, and they notched up a victory, and they didn't get too far from one or two other surprises as well.
Yeah, I thought it was absolutely brilliant. I mean, you saw in the USA team a few South Africans there. One, Marcel Brachy, who used to play for UCT and Western Provinces. They used to play for the Force as well. They're coached by Gary Gold. We know Gary Gold obviously used to be assistant to Peter de Villiers at the Box. He coached the Sharks as well. Who else is involved in the Jacques Farise, their defense coach, I think, World Cup winner. The US, they're putting it together. They didn't have the Rugby World Cup that they thought they probably might have had. Before I let you go, Pete, Japan, Springboks, what did you make of that? First of all, Japan beating Scotland, and what did you make of the possibility of the Springboks facing Japan in the quarters?
All right. So I think that firstly, let's say all hats off to Japan. They've been magnificent at this Rugby World Cup. I think that they are a team that play to their strengths. I think that Jamie Joseph and possibly even Eddie Jones before him, if we can look at a sort of medium to long term view, I think that what they've done is they've worked out exactly what they do well. They've worked out exactly what they don't do well, and they pretty much stick to their strengths. They try and avoid their weaknesses at every turn, and that's the game plan that they have formulated. So you've got to say well done to them. You give them all the kudos that they deserve. They've been great at this tournament. Something that I've noticed from them is watch what they do at the breakdown spoof. They generally don't commit more than three men at the breakdown. And I actually think that that is very clever on their part, because the first thing that it does is it eliminates the physicality element, which obviously Japan are not going to be as physical as a South Africa or a New Zealand or an England. That's just never going to happen. So you've got that going. But the second thing you do when you only commit three men to the breakdown, you create yourself a 12-man backline. And if there's one thing that the Japanese excel at, it's quick passing, it's quick movements, their offloading is excellent, and they've got some serious gas on the wings. Matsushima, for example, is a player that I've been very, very impressed with at this tournament. So that is what they are good at. Now, having said all of that, South Africa, in my opinion, got caught with their pants down in 2015 in Brighton. I think that the Box, and if I can even say the larger population of South Africa, all 53 million or whatever the number is these days, or certainly 4 years ago, I think all of us thought this is going to be an easy win, 20, 25, 30 points, no doubt about it. We underestimated the Japanese, not just as a team, but as a nation, and look what happened. Now, I think what will happen this time round, I think that we have in Russi Rasmus, a coach who is a stickler for planning. I think that he is a meticulous planner, and I believe that we will be better prepared for this match than what we were last time round, no doubt about it. I also think that if you look at the traditional strengths of the Springboks, that physical game, the keeping it tight, keeping it defensive, suffocating the opposition, pretty much beating them 3 points at a time. And when you've established a nice lead, then you might go out wide and score a couple of tries. If the Springboks do that against Japan in this quarterfinal on Sunday, then I have no doubt the Springboks will win this match, and they win it easily. That's not taking away from Japan and how great they've been at this tournament, but I think that Japan are not yet at that level where we could see them as a contender to actually win the World Cup, or a team that is going to be beating teams like the Springboks, the All Blacks, the Wallabies, England on a regular basis. So I believe that as long as the Springboks do what they are good at and play the sort of traditional Springbok way, and they execute the game plan properly, then I don't think that Japan have got any chance in this quarterfinal. And again, that doesn't take away from their achievements at this tournament.
Yeah, no, I think they've done incredibly well. I think, like you said, a lot will depend on the physicality that they do bring. They've got their number eight, their big number eight, Amanaki Mafi, is injury prone, which saw Michael Leach sort of come in and start and try filling that void. They've got Lapis Labaskagne as well, who might try to sort of squash that South African physicality, but they'll be up against it. Their line-out for me didn't impress. Shota Hori missed quite a few against Scotland, but Scotland were too one-track minded, trying to play everything through Finn Russell, their number 10, and they just couldn't create anything either side of their number 10 in their wings. So, but finally, Pete, as per tradition on this podcast, we have the upset and playmaker of the week. There are no upsets this week because I feel like it would diminish the achievements of the following people that I've then put up as contenders for playmaker. And it's a multiple choice question, so don't worry about it if you've not been watching every single game of every sport. I will give you the following options, starting with Japan beating Scotland 28-21 in a thriller to book a quarterfinal date with the Springboks at the Rugby World Cup, as well as Coco Gauff winning her first WTA title in Linz, Austria, and Eliud Kipchoge, I hope I said that name right, becoming the first man to run a standard marathon in under 2 hours, which is regarded as an unbelievable human feat in its own regard. Bafana Bafana beating Mali 2-1 at the Nelson Mandela Bay Stadium to take the Nelson Mandela Bay Challenge, the Nelson Mandela Challenge trophy at the weekend. Virat Kohli finally hitting an unbeaten 254 against the Proteas in the first innings of the second test in Pune to set them 601, which they ended up winning by an innings and 130 odd runs. It was a messy weekend, Pete, least of all for the Proteas, but who for you takes the playmaker gong?
All right, if I just give it a little bit of thought, right, so I expected Japan to beat Scotland, so well done to them. I think that maybe very few people thought that Bafana Bafana would beat Mali. What a fantastic result. Well done to them. Virat Kohli, South Africa, cricket, I think just if I put my very biased cap on, I don't really want to talk about it. And I think that there are many people who would agree with that. But what I'm going to go with is the 15-year-old sensation, Coco Gauff. I think she's wonderful. I think she's going to be great for tennis. And she is my winner.
Oh, wow, mate. That's a shocker. And we've had a few shockers in these Playmaker awards. I thought Eliud Kipchoge would have walked that one, no pun intended. But clearly he didn't run away with it this time around. But thanks very much, Pete, for joining us.
If I could just add in there, I think the thing with Kipchoge, without taking away from, as you say, an unbelievable achievement, he's the first man ever to run under 2 hours. Let's not forget that he did have pacemaking assistance throughout the race, and it was all geared towards him making that mark. So without taking away from it, I feel like there was additional assistance that he wouldn't ordinarily have in a real marathon, in an official marathon. And for that reason, Coco Gauff pips him to the post for me.
Excellent stuff. Thanks very much. You probably why adding to the validation why the IAAF still doesn't recognize the feat, but that's a conversation for another day, buddy. I really appreciate you joining me on the Sports Life podcast. We will certainly chat again sometime in the very near future.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been my pleasure, and hopefully I can come and join you again sometime. It'll be great.
It will be wonderful. But enjoy Doha. Say, how's it to Ntando for me? And your little dog, is his name Zulu, I believe?
His name is Zulu. And you know what? He's adorable. He brings joy and he also brings destruction.
Typical. Typical is what I would say. Cheers, mate. Chat to you soon. That's it from me, Sboom Chigeliso, and you've been listening to the Sports Live podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. Do also catch us on timeslive.co.za, as well as Sowetan Live, Business Live. We are also on Iono FM, the Apple Podcast Store, or wherever you get your podcasts. It could be Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, Pocket Cast. wherever. To connect with us, please use the hashtag SportsLive. Share your comments with us at TimesLive or at Sowetan Live on Twitter. A big thank you goes out to the Multimedia Live team led by Scott Peter Smith and producer Paige Muller, as well as the Tiso Black Star Digital Sports Department headed by Mninawa Mchana Ntloko. Our sound and audio mixer is Innocent Manyike. From us at the SportsLive podcast, it's goodbye for now.